Remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IOC Red Cross call on the 25th of January 2012. On the call today, we have Lanwe Ajayi, Volkan Kleinwächter, Osvaldo Naval, Konstantinos Komaitis, Jeff Newman, Kieran Malan-Shaoville, Thomas Rickett, James Bickoff, Greg Chatan, Charles Gomes, and Steve Dolbianco. From staff, we have Brian Peck, Margie Milam, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. We have apologies from Wendy Zeltzer and Joey Lillicote. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. And I noticed that there are some people on the phones that aren't on Adobe, so that's fine. Just if you want to say something, just interrupt and let me know, and we'll get the queue. So welcome to our second call of this year. And what I thought I'd do this time is to try to more narrowly focus us on the questions with respect to protection of the Olympic Red Cross names at the top level. And so I sent around a document. Most of you probably got it this morning. Sorry for the lateness of that. But we'll go through that document. And what we'll do first is I want to see if there's an update from staff on some of the outstanding questions that we had asked them to go back to discern some of the meaning behind the board resolution in Singapore and some other questions that we had. Then we'll go through this document and then finally talk about an update to the GAC or to the GNSL and the meeting with the GAC prior to Costa Rica. And then also talk about the Costa Rica meeting and next steps. So with that said, any questions on the agenda? I'm hearing some loud tapping. I'm not sure what that is, so if you can, put it on mute. I think that just went away. Great. So, or maybe not. Margie or Brian, do you have an update on some of the outstanding questions that we've asked you all to look into?
Yes, we do, Jeff. This is Brian. We talked internally with regards to the kind of the overall question, that is whether indeed if there's any sense or interpretation of the board's resolution of whether this should be a policy issue or an implementation issue. And the message we got from the internal discussions is that, you know, basically if you look at the plain language of the resolution, the board's calling for or asking for policy advice. But they didn't ask specifically for a PDP. They didn't specifically ask for implementation. They think that the words were carefully chosen. And so, you know, since they didn't specify what manner of policy advice is to take, at least, you know, internally the consensus is that it's up really to the GNSO to decide what manner, you know, the policy advice should take, whether you decide it's implementation or whether you decide it requires a PDP. So that's kind of the response we got from the internal discussions when we consulted with legal and management.
Okay.
In terms of some of the other questions, there was one question with what was the, you know, the reasoning for the applicant guidebook of not requiring or providing for a string similarity review for the IOC and Red Cross names. And basically, it's just because of the nature of how the names are, you know, are being treated for this first round. That is, they're not technically reserved names, which are the, you know, obviously subject to the string similarity review, but they're you know prohibited. And therefore not, you know, subject to the same review process. You know, the view is that the board created a limited exception pending the receipt of policy advice from the GNSO and the GAC. And so because they're not technically reserved names, they're not subject to that string similarity review that those names are. So it's because of the nature of what these names are, they're prohibited or temporarily prohibited for this first round. In terms of the list that the both organizations submitted, in different languages. The question was whether that's considered illustrative or definitive. That list is considered definitive for the limited purpose of the registration prohibition, you know, established by the board for this first round. In terms, there was one other question on whether a string similarity reviewer is allowed to consider a letter of non-objection from the IOC or the Red Cross in making her determination of similarity. Again, if the GNSO were to decide to make these names or place these names as reserve names, and thus making it subject to the, you know, the string similarity review. There is no provision for third parties to provide the string similarity panel with information to influence the panel's decision.
Okay, and this is Jeff on that last point, though. I think the question may have been, can an objection come in after the fact? So it gets by the string similarity review, mm-hmm. and then it gets to the point where objections can be heard. They could still file objections based on it.
I'd have to check and see on that.
Steve, that wasn't my question, actually, though.
Who's that?
Del Bianco, and you were replying to the question I had raised on the last call where I said that can the string similarity reviewer, assuming they're in the middle of a review, are they allowed to consider a letter of non-objection from, say, the Olympic Committee in making her determination of whether it's a similarity problem? And this was to address what Wolfgang and others brought up on the last call, Jeff, where if Olympic Airlines is in there and the Greek government gets the IOC to issue a letter saying, no, we're okay with that. That's not a similarity problem for Dot Olympic Airlines. I asked whether the reviewer for string similarity was allowed to take that letter of non-objection and therefore determine that there was not a likelihood of confusion and let it get through. Okay?
Brian, you understand the distinction that you're making?
Yeah, and the question I posed to our legal department is the string similarity reviewer allowed to consider a letter of non-objection from the IOC or the Red Cross in making her determination of similarity? That's the question I posed directly to legal.
Right, and they said that there's no process for that?
That's right. There's no provision for third parties to provide the string similarity panel with information to influence the panel's decision, was their response.
Okay.
So, Jeff, this is Steve. I would just ask us to put that on our agenda as something may want to consider in the form of advice so that the string similarity review, if it's applicable, doesn't become a block on otherwise applicable, otherwise permissible names.
Jeff, this is Constantino. Sorry to be jumping in. I raised my hand. If we are to go with the Nairobi Treaty, on especially for the Olympic mark, I don't know about the Red Cross, I can say that the Nairobi Treaty basically allows the International Olympic Committee to say who is allowed to use the term. The Nairobi Treaty talks about the sign as well, the five circles, but generally speaking, it is explicit that the International Olympic Committee has the ability to allow or not allow someone to use the term along with the sign. So possibly we can go with that and say that if there is a letter from the International Olympic Committee during this string similarity review, then the letter should prevail.
All right, I think we're jumping down into the options, which I certainly want to get into. But let's just hold off on is there any questions on the answers that Brian provided or any follow-up you think we need to make of the legal department or ICANN staff?
Well, this is Thomas. I raised my hand.
Yes, Thomas. Yes.
I think that considering this question that we just discussed, we also have to bear in mind that there might be a permission by the Olympic Committee, for example, even for identical strings, if they're fine with a certain company using that TLD. But if it actually were reserved names, identical strings couldn't even be entered in TAS. So a non-objection letter wouldn't help because that would be, you wouldn't even get to that stage.
That's a good point.
Put me in the queue when you can.
Sure. So just for people that didn't pick that up, what Thomas is saying is that at this point in time, if you were to go into the TAS system and enter in that string, it wouldn't let you move to the next step. So that's an important implementation detail that does need to be considered. Let me go to Chuck.
Thanks, Jeff. I understand staff's position that there is no provision for this, but the GNSO actually raised this issue and noted that there would be cases where there really wouldn't be confusion because of the way a string is implemented, and that could include a situation where there's a letter of non-objection from the IOC or Red Cross, probably in this case probably just the IOC, and they basically ignored it. So I think it is an implementation issue where they haven't dealt with things. The GNSO was very clear about the recommendation number 2, that to avoid confusion for users. And if, in fact, there's no confusion of users, then a string shouldn't be eliminated. But because there's not a provision for this now, that isn't even an option. In other words, there would be strings prevented by the string panel that don't cause any confusion. I think that's a flaw.
Thanks, Chuck. And I think that flaw is actually not just, it's not unique to these marks. There's a flaw in with other marks as well. But I kind of want to take this step by step. So let me just ask if there's any other questions on the not the content of what was responded, but is there any other questions that we would have to go back to ICANN staff? Or does everyone understand the answers that were given by Brian? Not necessarily agree, but understand.
Yes, sir. Okay. I'd like to ask a question. This is Larry.
Sure.
I want to find out if it is not too late to change the guidebook at this time, because most of the things we are supposed to discuss will be based on whether it is possible now to change the guidebook. If it is not, then our discussion may take a new direction. If it is, then we have so many options. We will be in a position to answer some of the questions that were outlined by Jeff. So my question is, is it not too late to recommend a change in the guidebook?
No. I'll give you my opinion on this, and it's certainly not definitive, but my opinion is whatever we do, if we do recommend a change, it's got to be very soon, and at least to the top level. But that's still no guarantee, even if we recommend it or the GAC and the GNSO agree to it, that that will end up in a change. But I think we need to proceed on the basis that there is a chance that certain changes can be made. And so I think it's a tough question to answer, but I think we need to kind of proceed on the basis that certain things may be able to be changed. Kieran? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that.
Thanks. This is Kieran Malin-Charyville. I have a question of clarification to Brian. The ICANN staff mentioned that there is not currently any provision for third-party influence on string similarity review, but are they willing to change that in the future or on our recommendation, or is that a final decision that there will be no third-party influence allowed?
Brian, you want to take that?
Sure. Well, I mean, we can certainly. I mean, if the GNSO decides, you know, as an implementation or as a policy advice that it views that provision should be changed, I think certainly, you know, at least it would be taken into account. I mean, as you pointed earlier, Jeff, I mean, there's no guarantee that a change would be accepted at this point. But again, I think that's an issue that, you know, for your group and for the GNSO Council to consider whether indeed it's worth taking another look and. You know, whether that there should be a change to that current provision.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions for Brian? Okay. So what I've done in this document, and by no means is it perfect or by no means is it necessarily accurate, I tried, is to try to boil things down into a series of questions and options with those questions. based on the GAC proposal. And if we could take things one by one, there may be additional options as well. So if I have not covered an option that you think is out there, for example, Alan said on email, you know, it's possible that we take each of these questions and apply it differently to Olympic and Red Cross. That's certainly something we could discuss and do. But if you think there's additional options that are left off, please let me know. My main point here is I just want to document all the options, and then hopefully in the next 10 days or so, have people come back with feedback as to either their individual feedback or if they're able to get groups, their constituencies or stakeholder groups to kind of weigh in on certain options. I think that would be very helpful. So just to kind of go over the GAC proposal, is that at the top level, the request is to protect the Olympic and Red Cross terms, like the words testing example in the applicant guidebook, and that's, I did a reference of section 2.2.1.2, extending those terms to multiple languages and receiving consideration during extreme similarity review. Right now, these terms, in not every language, is in the section entitled strength ineligible for registration and would not invoke strength similarity review. So, I'll read the options, and then before we discuss the merits, I want to know if there's other options that have not been considered. So, the first option is that we recommend no changes, that we just basically reject the GAC proposal, and this means that the names set forth in 2.2.1.2.3, A, are not considered reserved names, and B, applied for strings are not reviewed for similarity to the names in that section. That's obviously one option. Option two would be treat the names in that section as I put reserved names under section 2212, which would mean A, that the names are not available as GTLD strings to anyone, including the Olympic Committee or the Red Cross, and B, applied for GTLD strings will be reviewed during the string similarity review to determine whether they are similar to those in section 22123. The application for a GTLD string that is identified as too similar to a reserve name will not pass this review. And C, like other applied for GTLDs not passing string similarity review, there's no appeal. That would be option two. Option three is that we treat these the terms that are set forth in that section 22123 as, and I just created this label, whether we like that label or not, as a modified reserve name, meaning A, that the names are available, but only to the Olympic Committee and the Red Cross or Red Crescent movements as applicable, and then B, applied for strings would go through the string similarity review, and same thing with C, if you don't pass the string similarity review, there's no appeal. That would be kind of a modified reserve names approach. And option four, and then I broke this down into A and B, option 4A would be that it's not available to anyone except we can create an appeal process for those organizations that can demonstrate legitimate rights to those reserve names. Option 4B is that we allow the Red Cross and Olympic committees to register those names, and then after a string similarity review, we still allow an appeal for those that don't pass string similarity review based on the fact that they would have some sort of legitimate rights. And again, I don't define legitimate rights. That's something we would need to talk about and something Constantinos has implied with the discussion in the Nairobi Treaty. So those are kind of the four options that I see. Can anyone think of any other options? I think we discussed the letter of non-objection, which I guess would be a fifth option.
Yeah, Jeff, this is Chuck. That's what I was.
I think it would be a 4C, Jeff.
4C?
Like 4C is the same as above, except that rather than an appeal, that we could design a process for letters of non-objection from one who controlled the mark or the existing GTLD about which there was confusion.
And this is Chuck, Jeff, just if I can follow on that. Yeah, I think that is an additional option, and I think it fits whether it's reserved or just blocked like the GAC recommends or whatever. If somebody submitted a letter of non-objection, for example, whether it's allowed in string confusion or not, that could be an additional option. I think that's what Steve was saying, too.
Yeah, I think it's actually a separate option all to itself as opposed to a 4C, because it really wouldn't – it could be option 2, 3, or 4 plus the non-objection. Well, actually, no, it couldn't be option 2, because option 2 was nobody could even apply for it, not even the Olympic Committee or anyone else. So it would be more like a separate option where we would allow someone to apply for it, but only if they have a letter of non-objection could it go forward. Okay, is there any other options that we haven't – I see Thomas is on. Steve, did you give your – is your hand still up?
I'm sorry, let me bring it down. That was my intervention.
That's okay. Thomas?
Well, I think in order to be comprehensive, there needs to be a combination of the various options we discussed, one of which would be that the Olympic Committee or Red Cross themselves would be eligible for registration of the TLD. Then they could, for example, specify third parties that they allow to register the TLD, and also governments. Konstantinos mentioned a couple of, to me, very valid governmental interests in using certain terms. We could have non-objections by governments on top of that.
Well, I don't know if the organizations themselves don't object, then I'm not sure we need governments in there. You're talking about if the organizations don't have a letter of non-objection, but the governments do?
That was my understanding of Konstantinos' intervention, I think by email, that for certain cultural topics, there might be a valid governmental interest to use a certain TLD.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out if that's a separate option or how to put that in there. I think that kind of fits with the option 5. It's basically a letter of non-objection.
This is Konstantinos. However, option 5 is a letter of non-objection from either of the organizations. What is, for example, there is someone wants to register the word Olympiad being in Greece, the municipality of Olympiad, yet again the International Olympic Committee is not willing to grant this letter. They have valid claims on the term Olympiad because they are an established governmental entity. Yet again, the International Olympic Committee might reject their request for a letter. Would that fit under option 5?
So now I've broken it down. So now it's based on Konstantinos. We kind of have a 5A and B. 5A is letter of non-objection from one of the applicable organization. And 5B is a letter of non-objection from relevant government authority. I don't know if I've worded that right, but essentially that's 5A and B. Steve, was that you that had the comment?
Jeff, it's Steve. I typed in some language in the chat window because I did want to be sure that the letters of non-objection would include not just Red Cross IOC, but either the owner of the mark or the operator of the existing TLD about which the reviewer might conclude similarity. It shouldn't restrict it just to IOC Red Cross. And it's a different question whether the letter of non-objection is instead of an appeal or a step that happens before one and goes to an appeal. Thank you.
Okay, well, Steve, let me ask you a question on that. So when you say the operator of the existing TLD, how does that relate to the Red Cross or IOC?
If the Red Cross has already purchased Dot Red Cross or something like Dot Red Crescent or Rose Cruce, cruce, whatever you have said it wrong in Espanol, then they are the operator of that existing GTLD, and they're the ones that would be evaluating the new applicant. They would be the ones deciding whether the similarity could cause confusion on a new applicant. So just to be clear, we'd like the process for non-objection to be one that's broad enough to cover the party about whom there is confusion could say, we're cool with it. We're not concerned about confusion with that particular string. Don't have it fail string similarity on our account. And I do think that we want to allow that letter to come from whoever the target of the confusion is and not just from the entities of the IOC and the Red Cross.
Okay, so I think with the IOC and Red Cross, your statement would apply to subsequent rounds, not for this current round. Because obviously the Red Cross or Olympic Committee do not have an existing TLD.
No, but we are aware the GNSO policy called for the ability of a letter of non-objection for more than just IOC and Red Cross, and I think this is an opportunity to make a generally applicable fix to the string similarity review, along with making the IOC and Red Cross happy with accommodating their concerns.
Okay. Well, Steve, I'm going to put on my personal hat where I agree with you completely. But as chair of this group, I need to, at this point, limit us to only addressing the IOC Red Cross proposal and then maybe separately bringing up to the GNSO Council the notion of fixing the string similarity review like you talked about. So I would just, at this point, take out the words or the operator of the existing TLD just because it's not really related to the IOC Red Cross proposal at this point in time. As much as I, on a personal level, agree with everything you've said. Does anybody else have any comments about that?
Just a question for clarification. This is Thomas. So I think if we pursue that path, then it can't be reserved names by definition, right?
If we allow letters of non-objection or if we allow the IOC or Red Cross to register those names, then by definition they cannot be capital R, capital N, reserve names as defined in the guidebook. They would be some other category of names, which I kind of called in option three the modified reserve names. I don't care if that's the label we end up calling them, but that's just what I wrote. So yes, the answer to your question is yes. Chuck?
I had to take mute off. Sorry about that. I'm not sure that's true, but I may be wrong. Because, and I'm going to have to go to the second level to use an illustration. At the second level, aren't two-character names reserved, but there's a procedure, there's an exception procedure that can be applied with the approval of the government involved in that case because it happens to be the confusion with regard to CCTLDs. At least in some TLDs, isn't that the case?
At second level, that's absolutely the case. At the top level, and I read the language in the guidebook earlier, which says that if you look at option two on Adobe, the language in the guidebook is very clear that says that those are prohibited strings. I'm just turning to it right here. They are, sorry, I just had it. Okay. Certain names are not available as GTLD strings as detailed in the section. Reserve names are prohibited. It will not allow the application to be submitted. And I think it was Thomas that brought up the point, if you even try to enter that into TAS, it won't let you. So there is no, you're correct, Chuck, at the second level there is, or there are certain exemptions, or not exemptions, there are certain exceptions, there are certain mechanisms to have them removed from the reserve list, but that's not the case with the top level, at least in the current guidebook.
I understand that, and what I'm getting at, this is Chuck again, what I'm getting at is we could, as a committee, and the GNSO could endorse it, possibly, suggest a change in that regard if it was important to have them called reserve names. I'm not necessarily advocating that. I'm just saying I think our recommendation could change that so that TAS would accept it.
Yeah, again, kind of putting on the chair's hat, at this point in time, our mandate is limited to only the IOC and the Red Cross names. And again, while I do agree with you on a personal level, I think we need to limit our comments and our recommendations from this group to the GNSO to the IOC Red Cross names, as opposed to changing all reserve names and how they're treated.
And Jeff, I'm not suggesting anything inconsistent with what you're saying. I think your decision is right. What I'm saying is for Red Cross and IOC, I think we could still recommend that they be reserve names with an exception procedure. In fact, that's one of our options, isn't it, that you've listed?
Correct. Thomas's question, yes, that's absolutely right. That's a couple of the options that are presented, whether it's option 3 or 4 or 5. That's exactly what we're putting into place. We're just not calling them capital R, capital N reserve names. They're called something else.
Well, when you describe the options in your email, you call them reserve names, right?
I call them modified reserve names. I know, probably a bad label. You might need to think of a better
name. I understand the complexity. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else with any other options for question one? So we talked about now an option, whether we call 4C or 5. With adding that one in there. Thomas?
Excuse me, I was on mute. Just a little clarification regarding my question. I actually do have a preference for using the term reserve name, because that wouldn't make it look like we reject the GAC's proposal. So if there were a possibility to use the term they used, but having a variation to it, as you proposed in your in the language that you were using in your email, that would be fine by me. I just want all of us to be on the same track here.
Okay. Thanks, Thomas. All right, so it seems like we have the options pretty well documented. Let's see, what time is it? Let the other questions, and then as we have time, we'll go back and talk about the merits. But what I want to do then is after this call, I'll document that fifth option or 4C, whatever we end up calling it, and then I'm going to put that out for comment, and you guys keep me honest to make sure I've got it worded correctly. And then what I'd like to do, as I said before, is kind of open a 10-day period for people to make comments on which they prefer. Hopefully maybe they've talked to some other people in their groups to just kind of see if we can come to some informal consensus, at least within the group at the top level. Second, Costantinos agrees, good. The second question I have is, so once we decide which option we choose, regardless of whether it's option 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, the question then becomes that we have to deal with is, should those protections be applied in additional languages or languages that are – actually, I should just read the question as I wrote it. Should the protection set forth in question 1 apply to languages in addition to those set forth in the chart in section 2.2.1.2.3? If so, which additional languages? Now, I couldn't tell. Maybe Jim can help me on this. But the languages that are actually in the chart, are they the 5 UN languages, the 6 UN languages, or are there additional languages in there? I know you all had submitted that as kind of your proposal.
There's 10 languages in there, I believe, that we submitted.
And do those include all the UN languages?
Yes.
Okay. So then the options that we have are no, we don't. The option one is no, we shouldn't apply whatever protections they are to additional languages. Option two is the GAC proposal, which is it should be, and I'm quoting from the question and answer document, which says that they want protection in, quote, multiple languages, all translations of the listed names in languages used on the Internet, which obviously is the most broad option. And option three is something in between. I don't know. We'd have to talk about if that were the way we were to go. I don't know how we would go about limiting or adding those names, so we'd have to talk about a mechanism to do that. But I see those three options, those as being the three possible options. Does anyone see an option that I haven't documented? Konstantinos?
Yes, it is just 2 points. First of all, the language that exists in the applicant guidebook for the International Olympic Committee and the Red Cross go beyond the official UN languages, the six official UN languages. That's the first. And secondly, I know I should know that, but the reserved names list that ICANN has provided, are these names applicable to all languages? I mean, what's the status for those names in relation to languages? Should they be protected in every single language?
So my understanding, and someone please jump in if I'm incorrect, is that it's only the names, the specific reserve names listed in that chart. But remember, they do undergo a string similarity review. So it's possible that, at least for those languages where it looks similar, that it may be deemed to be confusingly similar, but basic answer to your question is it's only those as listed in that chart on page 2-8 and 2-9 in the guidebook.
Sorry, yes, and actually there is a note which I just noticed. Note that in addition to the above strings, ICANN will reserve translations of the terms test and example in multiple languages. The remainder of the strings are reserved only in the form included above. So there is a disclaimer at the top, which I just saw. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. So I guess that's a question for maybe to take back to ICANN staff. Brian and Margie, when it says that test and example are protected in multiple languages, do you have or does staff have a list of what languages those will include?
Okay, yeah, we can go back and check on that.
But presumably that may be in option three, a subset of, it's not every single language used on the Internet, but it's also additional languages than the ones that are, or could be additional languages than the ones that are proposed in the section where the Olympic and Red Cross names are mentioned. So it's possible that may be the option three.
All right. So just to clarify, Jeff, the question that you have is, you know, when it says, for example, for test and example, it'll be in multiple languages, is there a specific list of languages that will be reviewed?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go back with that question.
Okay. So does anyone think that there's a fourth option for that? Okay. So, again, that's another question that I'd like to throw out to everyone to respond to in the next, 10 days or so. And then question three is, once we decide on the protections and the languages, the question that the GAC, which is in the GAC proposal, is should this be permanent or essentially should it apply in subsequent GTLD rounds? The three options I see there are, we definitively say, yes, it should apply in all future rounds. Option two is, no, it definitively should only apply to this current round and not to any future rounds. Or option C, which is kind of the in-between, which is, well, it should definitely apply in the current round with no decision made on subsequent rounds, we should evaluate the results of this initial round, document lessons learned, and then decide on recommendations for subsequent rounds based on the results of the evaluation. That's kind of the in-between model or in-between option. Does anyone see an additional option for that question? Chuck?
Yeah, Jeff, I don't know that I see an additional option, but it, I think that option two and option three there could possibly involve a PDP if that was decided to do it that way. Am I right on that?
So if we... option two would be... Yeah,
in other words, one approach would be to just do it for this round and then initiate a PDP to deal with the issues in the long term. Again, I'm not advocating that necessarily. I'm just getting clarity.
Sure. I think that could be option three as well. I mean, I kind of put my own language below option three. But, yeah, I mean, that could easily be a PDP. Or it doesn't have to be. It can just be regular policy advice. So does anyone else see another option that we haven't thought of? All right. Well, it sounds like, or does anyone think there's any other questions at the top level based on the, again, this is only top level, based on the GAC proposal, are there any other questions at the top level that we should be considering and providing options for? I'll give a second for everyone to look at that. Okay, well, it seems like we've successfully documented the questions and the options. We do have 15 minutes left on this call. Let me just touch on the other things I want to get to, and then we'll come back to discussing some of the merits if people want to hang on to talk about that. We scheduled another call for 2 weeks to have this, you know, this call every 2 weeks. A few weeks ago, I got a request, or Stefan and I got a request to set up a meeting at some point in February with members of the GAC. Not as any kind of official GAC GNSO meeting, but more of a status update as to where we are on this proposal and to help them prepare for a more constructive session in Costa Rica. I thought that would be a good idea. I think it'll help us make progress on this. It'll also be good to kind of let the GAC know if we do have any consensus on any option, where we stand, and, you know, so that we're all not surprised or chastised at the Costa Rica meeting by the GAC for not having made any progress. Does anyone think that that's a bad idea? Let me ask that question.
No, face-to-face meetings are always good.
Well, I don't know face-to-face, but certainly conference call. but yes.
In Costa Rica?
No, I'm sorry. We're going to meet in Costa Rica face-to-face. The question I'm asking is to set up a call in February, so about a month before the Costa Rica meeting, update.
Fine for me to get.
Okay, so my thought is then to set up that call, and then I'll go to Chuck. To set up that call after our next meeting. So our next meeting is 2 weeks from today, which is, I'm looking at a calendar now, which will
February be... February 8th, I believe.
February 8th. And then so to set up the call, most likely to try the week of the 20th to see if that's a good time for members of the GAC. This will give us a little bit of time after that call to have some emails back and forth if we need to discuss any of the other proposals. And, of course, this is not anything definitive. It's not going to be our definitive advice. It's just kind of the way we're leaning. But in between that, the reason I was also thinking the week of the 20th is because there's a council meeting the week of the, so I guess it's the 16th, and we can update the council as to where we are so that they know before we have the meeting with the GAC what our, where we are. And then for planning purposes, let me go to Chuck and then Steve. Chuck?
Thanks, Jeff. I strongly think we ought to try and communicate with the GAC before Costa Rica. And hopefully, by the time we do that, we can narrow down our list of options a little bit, making it a little bit easier to get responses from them. But even if we don't, I think it would be helpful to ask for at least some of them to give us some feedback on some of the options we're considering. I don't think we need feedback on option one from the GAC. We know that already. But on the other ones, it'd be really good to start getting their thinking on some of these because they may not have considered some of these things and may like them or dislike them. We don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute now. Steve, you have a question?
Jeff, hey, the letter that you spoke of to Stefan, did it come from the GAC?
So there was no request by the GAC, no formal request by the GAC to have this meeting. It was an informal discussion by a couple of GAC members with some of us to have this status meeting. It was very informal, so it was not any kind of formal request, no.
Great. Thank you. And the second follow-up, to Chuck's point about how much to share, if we were to share with them the incredibly well-organized document that you prepared today, I fear that because it includes option one under question one, that you can never underestimate the GAC's capability to take things out of context. And if they think that we even considered telling them, well, no, which is what option one was, means that we have to really clarify that as we show the universe of options that we considered, that we did so to be complete. And it was not option one because we thought it was the first option to talk about. It was because to be complete, we needed to include it. And I think you know what I'm getting at. We just want to minimize the chance for misinterpretation, especially from GAC members, maybe for whom English isn't their first language. Okay? Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Stephen, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I did not draft this document as one to be a formal submission, so I do think wherever we're at around that time, that there should be something hopefully more narrowed down and certainly something that we all agree will not, or hopefully will not be taken out of context.
Yeah, that's fantastic, and it should be extensive because we want to document the extensive amount of work that's gone into this. Without unnecessarily alarming them, that we actually documented an option of just saying no. Okay? Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thanks, Steve. Konstantinos?
Yes, very briefly. Thanks, Jeff. I would just like to agree with Steve here. I think that it's very important that whatever we present to GAC, especially in whatever this group presents to GAC, especially in a written form, needs to be at least something that we have agreed, and this is the position of the group. I don't think that it is necessary to engage GAC in a process whereby we don't even know what we are deciding. And however, at the call, we can ask the GAC and we can exchange opinions and we can ask for clarifications on many things, especially in relation to the letter that they've sent. But I think that only the final document needs to go to the GAC in a written form. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Konstantinos. Yeah, and we should definitely, if we're successful in setting up this call, we should definitely on our next call talk about what, if anything, we present in written form to the GAC for that February meeting, which may be nothing other than a conversation. So we'll add that to the agenda, and given the amount of topics we have to talk about, I'm going to schedule the next call. Brian, if we could schedule it for 2 hours.
Sure.
Okay. Chuck?
I'm sorry. Just before I forget, Jeff, real quickly, too, and just for the group. We've mentioned before we're going to try, and it looks pretty promising that Amy Stathos from our legal department will be able to join the call for at least part of the time to answer questions that any of you might have, if you think that still would be beneficial for the group.
I think that would be really good, and I think we should make an effort to send you some of those questions in advance if we can.
Okay, great. We'll go ahead and schedule that, and we'll schedule it for 2 hours.
Okay. Chuck?
Thanks, Jeff. I just kind of want to reinforce, I think, what a couple of people already said and what I said earlier. Hopefully in the next 10 days and then in our next call, we will be able to narrow down the options that we're considering. But I really think before we do any finalizing, it'd be good to get some GAC feedback before we make a final recommendation to the GNSO. Now, that may be after Costa Rica, which is fine, but even before that call, in advance of Costa Rica, getting some feedback from them on, for example, if we're considering treating them as a modified reserve name or reserve name and the similarity review, I think that's a good one to get, even if it's from just a few GAC members, some insight in terms of what the thinking is before we get close to finalizing our decision.
Okay. Thanks, Chuck. And I truly hope that the next 10 days we are able to narrow down the options or at least see if there's a consensus or majority viewpoint or if something comes out of it. And please, I know the email traffic has been fairly light. I strongly encourage you to go back to your groups, present these options, see if you can get some feedback from your groups. Again, it's nothing binding at this point, but I'd really like when we present it to the council in mid-February where we are, I'd like to be able to kind of say whether it's got consensus support, whether it's got, what type of support it has, whether there are minority opinions, things like that. So to the extent we're able to do so, I think that'll be very helpful. I'm reading Steve's comment on the chat, which is, have we settled on the question of whether this is implementation or policy? I think the only answer to that, Steve, is that you're going to get different viewpoints, but we're proceeding as our group on the assumption that it's implementation, at least for the current round. But I don't think we're the ultimate arbiters as to whether it is implementation or policy.
But, Jeff, have we tested to see whether we have consensus that it's implementation?
A couple calls back, we discussed it. I have not heard very much opposition to treating this as implementation. But that's something we can get comments on in the next 10 days as well.
Thanks.
And, Jeff, this is Costantino. Sorry to be jumping on the queue again. I was wondering whether the next call could be an hour earlier for those of us being in Europe, since it is for 2 hours. Thanks.
Let me throw that out to the group. Does anyone have a problem if we took the next call, which is February 8th, and moved it an hour earlier? Okay, I'm hearing no objections. So, Brian, and that works for me as well. So, Brian, can we do that?
Sure.
Okay, so this would start, I don't even know what time you, let me look. It would start, I guess, London time would be at 1800. East Coast U.S. it would be 1300, and Pacific time would be 10.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Well, it's kind of that draws us to the end of Thomas, you have a comment. Sorry.
Thanks, Jeff. I was just wondering whether we have any knowledge about as to who wrote the GAC letter originally, because it might make sense to try to meet with those specific people because they have already thought quite a bit about this. You know, I think it would be good to have people that have a thorough understanding of the issue and explain to them why we, you know, might have an answer that at first sight looks like a rejection or a partial rejection.
Jeff?
Yes, sorry.
It's Jim Bykoff. I can tell you that I think the people that were most involved in that letter were Mark Carvel in the UK and Suzanne Riddell here in the US.
And thanks, Jim. And the way I was going to.
Heather, of course, signed the letter, Heather Dryden.
Right, of course. The way that the call will work in February and the way that the GAC works, because it's not an official GAC meeting, what they will do is Heather will do a basically say, look, this is not an official GAC meeting. We're going to have a call to get the status. Anyone in the GAC that wants to join is welcome. So that's kind of the way they'll do it. I'm sure those that are most interested in the subject will likely show up. And that would probably include Mark and Suzanne and others. So that's, you know, from a political standpoint, it would not be considered a formal GAC meeting. And I would not be surprised if, you know, we're going to try to get feedback from them, but my guess is that certainly the GAC as the GAC will not be providing feedback, and governments will not necessarily be providing feedback, but individual members may provide their personal view. So it's going to be important during that call for everyone to realize that they're not expressing any opinions of the GAC. And so my goal, to be honest with you, is to just let them know what we're thinking so that in Costa Rica they will have had time to socialize that within the GAC and then provide us with their true feedback in Costa Rica. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
As much as I would love for them to give us their feedback, I think that's just the reality of the way that it operates. Okay, so it's past the hour. I want to thank everyone for showing up, and please, let's get the dialogue on email. Let's get where people are sitting and hopefully get some discussion within our own groups. Chuck, I'm going to ask you if you could send something to the registry group.
I'll plan on it, Jeff, but I have one question in that regard. I wasn't online when we talked about those additional options. Did those get added to the document?
That's my action item. My action item is to add it to the document, and I'm going to talk to Margie and Brian. You're still available right after this call?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk to I'm going to talk to Margie and Brian to see if we can get that out today so that we can then start the discussion, and you could forward that on, and everyone could forward it on to their groups.
Good, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everyone.